Welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line. This is Bob Pittman. Glad to have you with us. We're with you each and every week, hoping to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. Give us a call. We're with you each week live at 3 o'clock on Wednesday, 3 o'clock Pacific time. You can call us at 253-471-9694 during the program. You can always email us at jeff@bobpittman.com. Give us an email if you have questions during the week you want to send in. That's great. We're happy to take them and try to tackle them maybe on next week's program or the week after. If you have ideas for topics for the program, be sure to email those ideas to us or give us a call and let us know what you think is a kind of a fun topic as we work our way through the weeks and months and years of the new edition of Bob Pittman's Legal Line right here at bobpittman.com. I want to mention one upcoming event, which if you're listening too late, I guess you'll say, hey, that sounded like it was probably fun. But we've got our first live Bobcast, as we call them, coming up this weekend at the Puyallup Fairgrounds. It's actually at the Fred Oldfield Western Art and Heritage Center. I hope I'm saying that right, Fred. Fred's 93rd birthday coming up, and we'll be out there. Dorothy Wilhelm's going to join me, and we're going to be having some fun, old Western fun. We will talk about the law of the Old West, or in the Old West, maybe both, I guess. And we'll have Chief Justice Gary Alexander with us, who is the leading, in my mind, the leading court historian in the state of Washington, maybe the Western states. Amazing historian, along with being a terrific jurist. So he's going to help us out with territorial law, territorial justice. This is before we became a state, so that'll be coming up this weekend. That would be the 19th. Hope I'm right on the dates, huh? What is this? This is the 16th? See, I shouldn't do this. I should know exactly what the date is. Saturday the 19th out at the Puyallup Fair, 11 to 4. So if you can stop out with us, that would be terrific. Check out the Bobcast. We've got an archive going. Just go to bobpittman.com. Look for the Legal Line page. We'll have a new page coming up to reference the network, the Common Sense and Justice Network, csjnetwork.com. And we'll have a separate page coming up. But Jeff's working as hard as he can. He's got a lot of stuff to do. And so he'll be putting that together for us, too, in the near term. We'll be producing a new program called In the Middle with Dorothy Wilhelm and Bob Pittman. That'll be fun. We'll have some neat guests who will be kind of in the middle, I guess, being worked over by Dorothy and Bob. I don't know. What do you think? But stay tuned for that as well. And then Dorothy will be doing Never Too Late. Of course, you can read her column. She writes in the News Tribune, has done so for quite a few years, and it's carried in a number of papers around the country as well. So be sure to check all that out. We always have a little fun with the law. It's a serious topic, needless to say, but we don't mind poking fun at ourselves. I'm a lawyer, so I guess I can at least poke fun at myself if nobody else. If anybody else wants to join in, of course, that's always welcome. We try to bring you neat topics each week, along with taking your questions. And this week I'm really, really excited about talking to Jeff Pritchard. Jeff, welcome.
It's good to be here, Bob.
We really appreciate your taking time to hang out with us a little while and help people understand what on earth a community foundation is. I mean, as long as community foundations have been around, and of course I think of it as just kind of second nature to me to say, oh, use the community foundation. I mean, use the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. But a lot of people, I think, still don't know what a community foundation is. Now, I should tell everybody, you're the director of development with the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. Is it okay to tell people you're a CFP too? I just told them. Which I take my hat off, by the way, to people who become CFPs. For everybody out there, that's Certified Financial Planner. That is not easy to get. And it is, when I think of that, I think of, you know, the work that goes into becoming a CPA, other folks out there who work pretty hard to get that designation.
And it's a challenging program. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it really is. And so my hat's off. You can see my forehead here, because you can see the pictures, I guess, but my big forehead, I guess, but my hat's off to you on that. But what on earth is a community foundation?
Well, community foundations act as umbrella organizations to facilitate individuals and families with their philanthropy. And so we act as, again, kind of an umbrella organization that individuals can set up funds for almost any kind of charitable purpose they want, whether it be a scholarship fund, a donor advised fund, a designated fund.
And we'll find out what those are in a moment.
You sure will. But it's a way to simplify the administration for a family that wants to set up a charitable legacy.
Wow. Now, when I hear that, I think to myself, okay, you got to be a Rockefeller, a Gates. Now, I guess Gates more than Rockefeller. Some people are saying, Rockefeller? Who's that? Gates? We know Gates. But you don't have to be someone like that, do you?
No, and that's one of the real advantages of a community foundation structure is it kind of makes philanthropy available to everyone. So, the Gates or the Rockefellers are able to set up a private foundation because they have millions and millions to set aside. Well, the average family certainly doesn't. And a community foundation provides a structure where individuals or families can set up a fund for as little as $10,000 in most cases and then give to charitable organizations they want to support from that fund for perpetuity if they want.
Wow. I think that just to me, as you sit back and think about that, it's so exciting because a lot of people, I think, and when I'm involved in estate planning and I talk to people, I think a lot of people have no idea that they can take a significant but still relatively small amount, not, you know, Rockefeller Gates kind of money, and do something long term for some of the neat things that they're interested in, which turn out to be charitable, whether it's things like helping support a school, maybe a scholarship. We were down, Diane and I went down for the first time, I have to admit, the first time to the Glass Museum. And, of course, they'd probably love to get some money, I imagine, groups like that.
And we have a lot of individuals who support them. But you're right, it can be a wide variety, everything from we support, funds are set up for people's alma mater, for their churches, that's very common. But any religious or charitable organization can be supported in this manner.
Now, community foundations are literally all over the country, aren't they?
Yeah, there's over 700.
Okay.
And the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation was actually established in 1981. This is our 30th anniversary.
Wow.
And we have about $75 million. And we contribute about $3 million of that back into the community every year.
Wow, every year?
Every year. But I think the first one was started back in Cleveland around 1947. And they've really grown because they're such a great vehicle for people to kind of leverage their philanthropy.
Right. And, of course, it has the status of a public charity, like a church or an educational institution, in terms of the overall tax status.
Yeah, as an attorney, I knew you'd ask that.
I have to talk about that, you know.
Yeah, because you're contributing, and it's a public charity.
Right.
And so, actually, you get charitable tax deductions, and those deductions, for the most part, are more advantageous than if an individual set up a private foundation. Higher levels of deductibility, generally higher in evaluating whether it's the basis or the market value that gets that someone can deduct. It's
right.
Usually the higher of those two on a public charity versus a private foundation. So there's a lot of technical advantages to the community foundation structure as well as the flexibility and the simplicity.
Well, and I know I think a lot of people would say, "Gee, I've got to start my own foundation." I mean, if you ask people on the street, how much would you have to start your own foundation? I suspect a lot of people, if they could answer, would say, $1 million, $2 million. I mean, just, significant dollars to start your own foundation, maybe less. But
yeah, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
I've heard numbers anywhere from $1 million as high as $10 million.
Yeah.
The challenge is that having a private foundation is a lot like running your own business. And
that's a good point.
A lot of times we see examples of, particularly with sports stars, who set up a private foundation, maybe they have in-laws or someone run it, and then they don't realize all the reporting requirements, all the tax issues, and they start getting tied up in the red tape, and they kind of defeat the purpose of setting it up to where it makes it very challenging for them to accomplish their charitable objectives.
Boy, that and I remember, I'm thinking back a number of years ago, I was talking to a nice fellow who was very charitably inclined, and he wanted his own foundation. And I remember we talked and talked, and I said, you know, I said, this is what I'd like to suggest to you. Why don't you test drive a foundation? Why don't we'll form one, we'll set it up, and you can set up your board and all that, and why don't you put a little bit of money into it? You know, it will get it going. And he put, you know, what's a little bit? I mean, he was in a group where it wasn't hard for him to donate, say, $50,000 in a year. And so I said, why don't you throw $50,000 in this and get it going and test drive it, see how you really like it. Well, he did. We talked about it. He said, okay, let's try that. And so we got it. He says, I'm sure I'm going to want to put more in. I'm sure I'm going to want everything when I die to go into this. So he gets it up and running. He's test driving it, and it's the worst nightmare he's ever been. It was horrible. Now, not all private foundations are going to be horrible. They're not all going to be a nightmare. But this was just terrible for this guy. And the people got on the board, and they were, you know, the people were fighting and taking over and wanting to take lots of trips to go to conventions and stuff, and he was pulling his hair out saying, what have I done? And then I reminded him, I said, okay, remember we said we would test drive. I said, now how much is in there? Well, like 50,000 or whatever it was. He put a little more in. I said, you know, worst case, I said, you can take that and fold and just let it go over to a community foundation. And then you can work with someone like a Jeff Pritchard and get things set up for when you are gone, or you can play with it during your life. And when you're gone, everything can go into the community foundation. Act just like you were going to act with the private foundation in terms of all the charities. He was ecstatic.
Yeah, and there are those, as you say, that private foundations are the better way to go for whatever reason.
For some people, yeah.
But for an awful lot, it's all that administration, it's all the reporting, and a lot of times what you see are family dynamics that create problems for a private foundation. Maybe it's set up by the patriarch or the matriarch of the family, and then as the children grow, they move away, their interests become much different, and all of a sudden that private foundation is a very cumbersome vehicle for that family. So again, it just depends on the situation.
Well, it does, and I don't mean to say everybody's going to have a terrible time with it. I feel like I'm giving a bad rap to private foundations.
I like hearing you say that community foundations are great.
Well, but this is based on, you know, a number of years of being in the estate planning business, if you will, and practice, and counseling people and talking to people, and what people really want to do is they want to help other people, and they have some great ideas about how they want to do it and who they want to help. And the community foundation, in my mind, just fits in so well. It's like this wonderful way. I mean, it's like you get to mold it, though, too. So you've got the clay, if you will, there that you get to manipulate yourself, working with someone like you, say, at the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, and mold it into something that you like. It might just be that you want to do a scholarship at your high school.
Yeah, and most people, they set this up because that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
They want to support causes, provide scholarships. They want to give the money away.
Yeah.
And they normally aren't that excited about all the administrative red tape that can go along with a private foundation.
That's right. And there's some serious red tape and some problems if you don't dot all the I's and cross the T's just right. And you might think you're doing things just right, and it turns out that you're not, and now you've got problems.
Yeah, with a private foundation, it's very, and again, you know this as well as I, Bob, a lot of issues around the perception or the issue of self-dealing.
Yes.
And it creates, in order to avoid even the perception of that, it can be very burdensome on the foundation founders or the family.
That's true.
So again, community foundation can be a good way.
And I think sometimes, I mean, private foundations are for some people, so I'm not saying they're all bad because they're not. But sometimes people will say, you know, gee, I know this is the best thing for my family, and maybe for the parents at that level, maybe it's great for them. And then the kids really, you know, maybe they go along with it because the parents are around. Once the parents are gone, it's really hard sometimes, if it hasn't gelled, to make it work, and now it becomes work and not much fun. And whereas if you move it to the model of the community foundation, you take that and it really can be fun because let's take an example. Let's say that I want to leave, $1 million to the community foundation when I die. And I would like my two sons to have some involvement then in how the dollars are spent, perhaps, after I'm gone. How would that go? What would we actually do? Let's say I give you a call. Hey, Jeff, this is what I'm thinking. I want, you know, I'm going to leave $1 million to the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. I want Jeff and Greg to be able to help with where the money goes after I'm gone. What would you say?
Typically, that's going to fall under a donor advice fund structure.
Donor advice fund.
And then the two sons would be set up as your successor advisors.
Okay.
Or if it's in your estate, the instructions to create this is in
your
estate.
Or maybe I put $1 million in now and I get to do it.
But they'd be the advisors.
Okay.
And then they're going to determine what is funded going forward. Now, sometimes when family situations are rancorous, we see a parent literally in their state set up two funds, one for each of the children because the children don't get along. And this is viewed as not a vehicle that will bring them together. It'll worsen the situation. But when there's siblings involved, typically they're going to decide every year what's going to be supported. One of the nice things about a community foundation structure is that that donor advised fund can either be endowed or not endowed. If it's endowed, it limits the amount that those children can contribute every year. So if a parent's worried that maybe, I actually have had a situation like this where parents set up a fund, but they were worried about two of the three kids were, overly generous, and they were quite seriously worried that if it wasn't endowed or protected, that the first kind of sad story that came along is those kids might give it all away, everything that the parents had spent years building up. By endowing it, then it limits the distribution to maybe between 4 or 5%. So a child or a grandchild can't, with good intentions, but give this away when the parents who set up actually wanted it to last for generations.
So, for example, let's say I had funded this at death with even, I guess I could do it with, say, $100,000.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
So let's say I do... I better bring Diane in. Diane and Bob leave $100,000. And so what that would mean, if we want it to go on kind of indefinitely and run out for at least, you know, quite a while, whatever quite a while is, we could say that Jeff and Greg could stop by annually or whatever down and hang out with Jeff for a little while and talk about how to spend maybe $4,000 or $5,000 a year. Out of the 100.
Right.
If it's endowed.
Yes.
If it's endowed. And every year they would come down, or I guess, well, let's just say they drop on down and they say, hey, Jeff, it's time to spend our money. How much do we have to spend? And you would probably say, well, it's, you know, whatever it is, $4,000 or $5,000, whatever it might be. It might grow a little bit over
hopefully
time too. So especially if we have, you know, wonderful management, which I know we do. But anyway, but they would get to come down and actually spend that money. Now, where could they spend it?
Well, I'm not sure spend is the word we
I
like
shouldn't
to
use.
Use
it. Where could they invest it in the community? I mean, what are the limitations for them?
That varies with community foundations.
Okay.
Some community foundations are more restrictive than others. We, as an example, have very few restrictions.
Let's assume it's Pierce County, though. Maybe it's something that maybe I even say, Diane and I say, hey, you know what, spend the money generally in Pierce County.
Well, if it can be done a lot of ways. Parents who set this up in your example could actually designate specific organizations or make that a part of it. I want half the money to go to these three organizations, and then my kids can decide on the other half. It's very flexible.
Okay.
But for the most part, you're looking at any qualified religious organization, any charitable organization, 501c3, even exceptions can be made to where funds can go to individuals if those individuals are carrying out a charitable purpose.
Oh.
So, for example, if a dentist was doing dental work for the indigent,
right.
Support can go to him. There's a few hoops for us to jump through.
Interesting.
But it's a very flexible vehicle.
Right.
And again, the geographic limitations, that just varies with what community foundation you're working with.
Sure.
Most try and be flexible so that if someone, maybe they grew up in Wisconsin, they move out here to Tacoma, they want to support a few things in Wisconsin as an example.
Right, good example.
They can do that. There's no restriction.
Still include something out here, or it could be flexible. Now, could it be flexible enough? I mean, the current disaster, and I wish we didn't keep having so many disasters, but here the poor... folks in Japan are having a terrible time from the earthquake and the tsunami. If things were structured right, is it possible to even benefit something on an international basis?
It is.
A little harder, isn't it?
It's harder. Typically what we'll do, and a lot of organizations somewhere, is to try and route that through an American charity. So, for example, the Japan disaster, that's typically the American Red Cross.
Right, I immediately think of American Red Cross. That's right.
So normally the support would be there.
Okay.
Where it's challenging for us is if someone wants to support, for example, a sole missionary in let's say, the Philippines. There's no American structure to support that one individual in this example. And so that becomes pretty challenging. But normally we can find an American-based entity supporting the cause they want, even if it's international, with a few exceptions.
Sure. One of the things that's always intrigued me and made me want to use a community foundation is a lot of people have ideas of benefiting this group or that group, and they're very small groups sometimes, maybe small charities that are great charities, nothing bad. Maybe it's a charity, let's say, somewhere in Washington helping for animals, let's say. Maybe it's an animal charity. Maybe it's whatever it might be. And one fear I have is that you give the money to that group, and if there's a year of mismanagement, maybe, or some problem comes up in the charity, all of a sudden the money's gone. And what have we done? Whereas if we give that same amount to the community foundation, am I understanding correctly? Now I know that you're going to be writing a check, let's say. Let's say I want to benefit that, charities that benefit stray dogs, let's say, or something. And so I say, I know there's a group out here that's doing it. So as long as they're around and everything, I want this money to be used every year on an endowment basis to benefit that. But am I correct that if that charity goes out of existence, let's say, that you're going to stop sending the checks, I assume?
That's correct. There's a couple issues there.
Yeah.
One is as I mentioned earlier, the fund can be endowed, so it's going to limit the total dollars amount
right.
every year going out.
So that it can go on, more or less forever.
But your point about the community foundation, one of the real advantages is that we can adapt to both the changing community's needs or opportunities,
right.
and if an organization that you want to support has either gone out of business, their mission has changed from what you envisioned when you set it up. And so we can change the giving of the donor. And this is why, quite frankly, why we're used in a lot of people's estates is because they can set something up knowing that we'll adjust their giving long after they're gone as the community changes, even if it's, as you say, a specific organization that goes out of business, we can redirect it. I'm working with a donor right now, and they're looking to acquire a piece of land in the county
right.
to create a park.
Okay.
But we've worked into that agreement that if that doesn't work out, those funds can be redirected to another conservation group right tied close to that area.
Interesting. But see, that to me is so powerful, because if I know that someone is checking each year to make sure that the charity is still going, whether or that things can be handled properly. I mean, what if you pick a disease? Let's say, and then we actually it's
polio.
Cured. Yeah, polio.
March of Dimes. Polio.
Yeah, there's a great
classic example.
And it's gone. Now what happens? Well, I mean, you know what I would hope, I guess, if I'm not around, is that maybe something else would be benefited along those lines. I realize we don't have an equivalent to polio, but there's a whole host of other kinds of things. And I would guess now, if that were occurring, let's say we're going to turn the clock back a ways and I don't remember what year we eradicated polio as an issue.
Sulk.
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago. So let's imagine that money was sitting in a community foundation. I had left it. I'm dead. And this money's there. What would the community foundation, what would a community foundation do in that case?
Well, one of the things we try and do, and we're probably only successful in it half the time because we don't always know when we're in someone's estate. But we like to sit down with typically a couple and really find out the organizations they're supporting.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that's written in their will, but why?
Yeah.
Why they care about those organizations. So then, and we write that up, kind of create a biography of those individuals,
right.
file it. So then if 20 years down the road, there is a change, the organization goes out of business, the disease is eradicated, whatever the case may be, we can go in the file, read the biography and say, oh, they wanted to support this issue because they had because their son passed away because of that. Okay, we can try and then mirror their intent as much as possible, right, with what currently is needed in the community.
Oh. I like that, though.
Yeah, and it's something we really try and do, so we really know the intent behind the donors, because that can happen more frequently. Polio is an extreme example, but right, we often have small startup organizations that go out of business, or they change their mission, or because of their board and their leadership right, changes, they dramatically change their direction.
Well, or, you know, we hear about, and I don't know what year people are listening to this, but you hear about, at least currently, schools closing. And things are just changing dramatically. And so let's say that I had set up a scholarship fund for a high school, and never imagining that the high school would just disappear, and then that school gets closed. Now, I'm gone, so you can't ask me, but I would imagine that then, with the great thing about the Community Foundation is that I haven't given the money to the school and it just goes down goes down the the
drain.
Drain, I guess. I'll try to make it nicer. But the drain, I mean, that money's still sitting there if it's in an endowed position. And the Community Foundation, I would assume, would then, using the information in the file about why I wanted to do this and what, would do something to make it equivalent.
As close to their intent as possible.
See, that to me is one of the neatest things about a community foundation. And if I were going to get up on the soapbox and try to tell people, which I do actually, I have a soapbox in my conference room over there, and I get on every so often. And people are saying, "Oh man, there goes Bob again."
Yeah.
But it's one of the neatest things. And even if you want to benefit, let's say, three different charities, to me, it makes so much sense, and maybe I'm wrong. I'd like to know if you think I'm wrong. XYZ, we won't even name it. There are three charities, maybe four, that I really like to benefit. I would rather put the money at the Community Foundation and say, okay, here are the four, and here's why I'm doing these. Here's all the information. You're going to make all these great notes, and it's going to be in the file. But now I can rest easy. I know that you're going to give it to those four each year, assuming they're viable and they're functional and everything. But if one of them disappears, which is very possible in the world, I mean, as you go out decades, there will be a way to either replace it or do something. The money doesn't just go away.
Right. That's correct. Yeah.
But that to me is just tremendous.
Well, we think so.
I really do. And I think,
yeah, no, it's,
and I wish
it's probably one of
the
biggest advantages of a community foundation you know, we started 30 years ago. You look at this community, Pierce County community, 30 years ago, and the issues and the opportunities that we faced entirely different than today.
Yeah.
And 30 years from now, that'll be the same story. It'll be entirely different.
That's true.
And so we can adjust
that. I
expect
you to be around in 30 years, by the way.
Oh, so. Absolutely.
Okay, all right.
But we can adjust yeah, that giving, and you're right. A lot of people see the advantages of that.
I just think that is, if people aren't thinking of that, they're missing the boat. And I can say that. I'm, everybody knows, I'll say whatever I feel is appropriate, and in a good way. I mean, I mean it in a really good way. It's just a tremendous planning opportunity. And even, I guess you could say, okay, Bob, I want to give to the University of Washington, biggest university in the area, I assume. I would still say, I don't know. I mean, maybe University of Washington isn't going to go out of business. But I guess I would still like to run something through the mesh, if you will, and the safety net of a community foundation. I mean, maybe I want to benefit the law school, let's say, at the University of Washington.
Well, a better example is, what if you wanted to benefit the law school of UPS?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there, a great example. And I gave money to the law school at UPS.
And then they sold it to Seattle U.
Good point.
And where are you?
Yeah.
And so if we have a donor's intent, did they?
Yeah.
Do we think they wanted that money to follow up to Seattle
right,
U, or did they want to support higher education in Pierce County?
That's right.
And if we've had a chance to visit with them,
yeah,
we're going to know, again, what their real intent was.
Yep, I think that is so important. And I think if nothing else from our discussion today, if listeners come away with that, I think is one of the key parts in my mind. What would you say is one of the key factors that people should be thinking about in terms of a community foundation? What would you would you label that at near the top of the list?
Yeah, there's a laundry list of other things that are advantageous. There's this, the administrative simplicity.
Okay. I like that.
Your CPAs out there will appreciate the higher tax deductibility for they or their clients in using a public charity versus a private foundation.
Okay.
The other thing is, of course, professional.
Everybody get your checklist going.
There you go.
Listen again on the podcast. Get your checklist going.
there's the whole professional stewardship aspect, and that's two things. Both professional investment management for the funds that are entrusted with us, but then also kind of a compliance role that to make sure that the organizations being supported have their 501c3 or their religious classification. You don't want to inadvertently run afoul of the IRS rules for the charitable contributions. That can create real problems.
Right.
Or, you know, everything from international issues to OFAC to you know, whatever. So we can provide a compliance opportunity as well.
Well, let me stop you there just for a second. So let's am I too far astray to say, let's say we have a donor advised fund going, and I'll pick on Jeff and Greg. They show up for their annual event to talk with you about things, and they've got ideas on some charities. Hopefully they've talked to you before this. Am I understanding correctly? I mean, you probably have information about the charities that they're thinking of donating maybe money to this year.
We either have or can acquire
okay.
it.
But that's because you probably are able to get information a lot easier than just Bob or Jeff and Greg, you know, checking on their own. You
well,
know what to ask for.
Yeah, and because we're doing a lot of due diligence in this community,
yeah.
certainly anything in the Pierce County area, we're going to know which organizations are effective and which ones, well, maybe they're not so effective.
Right.
And we actually have people who come to us for that expertise. We have one woman who comes to mind who inherited a fair amount. And for the first time in her life, she could make an impact. She could make a difference in the community with financial resources. Mm-hmm. And she knew she wanted to support the environment, but she wasn't how. And so we really worked with her for, gosh, almost a year, inviting her to a lot of events, a lot of education, to really clarify in her mind what she wanted to support specifically, which organizations. And now she does that annually. But we worked with her. She kind of leaned on our expertise, because this was a first time opportunity for her, and she really didn't know where to start.
I like it. Now, she's doing that while she is alive.
She's doing that while she's alive.
And it's something that could potentially go on after she's gone.
Certainly.
After
Certainly.
She dies. Someone yeah. I was talking to someone on the phone the other day, and I'm, you know, you kind of dance around the issue of death sometimes. You know, maybe you don't, but and I was saying, you know, this and that, and she stopped me on the phone. She said, "Bob, my husband is dead." And she didn't mean it in a bad way. She just said, "It's okay. I know he's dead. You can say the word." And it's, you know, we always worry.
Right. A lot of people, yeah,
yeah,
and
you
dance around it.
Yeah, and I don't mean to do that. I think I was saying one day, I said, "Well, if you die, blah, blah, blah." And the person stopped me and said, "Bob, it's a when." And near as we can tell, it's not an if. So, but when you die, so she can, you know, I go back to my example of the private foundation. You could test drive a fund with the community foundation, could you not?
Absolutely.
And
a lot of people
do. If you really
do.
Want to leave a bundle at the time you die.
A lot of people do for uh-huh. everything from what's the service like,
yeah.
How are they to work with.
Yeah.
But it can be test driven, in your words, for a lot less than test driving a private foundation.
Yeah. Because you're talking, people obviously give all kinds of amounts, but you can actually get involved in test driving for as low as, what, $10,000?
With correct? The Greater Tacoma Community
with
Foundation,
yeah, $10,000. And I realize yeah. different foundations have different numbers, but using the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation as an example today, that is, I mean, it's real money, but it's not end-of-the-world money.
Well, no, and the other thing is, it's not like it's kind of been given away.
Yeah.
That's money they're going to be able to contribute to the charities they want to support.
Right.
So they're not test driving the end user. Those are organizations they care about and want
Good
to
point.
Support. They're just test driving us as yeah. as a you know, a helper, and
right.
facilitating their philanthropy
yeah.
is all their test driving.
But going back again to my example with the fellow with the private foundation, he could take and set up a fund with X dollars, as long as it's the 10 or above. And every year, let's say it's an endowed fund, every year work with you to identify charities, to give away that say roughly 5%, 4.5%, 5%. And assuming he likes the test drive over the next several years, he can then go into his documentation, his will, his trust, mm-hmm. and he can say, okay, I like these guys. And when I die, X percent of my estate is going to go into that fund. And now it gets funded in a big way upon death, but he's had the fun of test driving and yeah. enjoyment of giving through
and
the community foundation.
And that's a great way for people to operate. A lot of the times when we receive funds through an estate, maybe they had a relationship with us, or their professional advisor, their attorney or their CPA have. But test driving it for putting their toe in the water is a great way to do it.
I think so, too. And I think, worst case, let's take worst case for a moment. I know this wouldn't happen, but let's say they go down the road and they say, man, we just don't like this. I assume they could fold out of it and just have the $10,000 donated to some charity at that point, or just walk away and let you take it as the foundation.
If they haven't endowed it, and if they're very forthright with us, which is fine, and they say this is a test drive, we'd recommend they don't endow it. If it's not endowed and they're unhappy, they can move it to to their charitable organization. They can even move it to another community foundation. Okay. If it's not endowed, there's no strings attached, and it's they've gifted it,
right?
But it's essentially their money to direct.
Well, in worst case, even if it's endowed, they can walk away and just say, you guys are in charge now, and we're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, so the most is they've given, in that example, made a $10,000 charitable contribution that
they
got a tax deduction for.
That's right. Because once they give it to us and the gift is complete, they get their deduction.
So, I mean, that to me, if you can look at the worst case and say, you know, the worst case is pretty darn good. It's like I wrote a check for that $10,000. I got to play with it, if you will, during the time. And I'll bet you there are very few people who would ever want to walk away from it. It's always good to talk about worst case, I think. As an attorney, I like to consider worst case and say, okay, can we live with that? Where are we going to, you know, what's the situation if we don't like this? Now, as far as personnel, let's say we absolutely love everybody at the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation now. We love Jeff Pritchard. We think he's great. We think your staff is tremendous you've got there. I mean, they are, by the way. But what are my assurances that 50 years from now, you may still be around, but some people might be gone 50 years from now.
I hope I'm around at all 50 years from now.
Everybody's going to the website to look at Jeff's picture now.
I think I'm going to make it another 50 years, Bob.
But, I mean, why should I feel comfortable that everything really is going to go the right way 50 years from now?
Well, that's, that question you can make to any institution.
Absolutely. I agree.
Your bank, your investment manager.
Any institution.
We've been around for 30 years. Good track record, very respected in the community.
Absolutely.
But again, it's kind of like any institution. If someone is unhappy, the funds are not locked in there.
But the thing I think is that you've got, you've established this pattern, if you will, wonderful pattern for the past, just picking on you now, for the past 30 years, and I'm sure we could say it of a number of community foundations. And the pattern is set. No one person, because obviously there's a board of directors with a community foundation, I would say almost always, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and let me, because that is pretty broad-based. There's a board of directors.
Right.
But then, for example, a number of committees, everything mm-hmm. from an investment committee.
Okay.
Distribution committee, real estate committee. So when someone donates a house or something, we have specialists to deal with that.
Sure.
So there's probably, when you start adding in committee members and board members, behind the 10 or so staff that we currently have, you've probably got a total of 100 people, and typically a lot of expertise. Those people are involved because they've got significant expertise. So there's a lot of folks standing behind.
And one point I would make as an attorney looking at it, I'd say, okay, if you have one person go bad on us, the whole organization is not going to go bad.
No.
I mean, if you had only one person running everything and that person goes off the deep end, well, we're in trouble, possibly. But it's really hard for something like a community foundation, I think, and that's probably in general. I know you can only speak for Greater Tacoma, but I think in general there are enough folks involved usually that it makes me feel comfortable, I guess, thinking that it's hard for the group to go totally sideways and all of a sudden my money, instead of benefiting stray dogs, is benefiting I don't know what.
Well, and actually, even small community foundations, when they start up, typically they will umbrella their assets with another community foundation. So, for example, SQIM has a small community foundation, and they house that with us.
And if you're not in Washington, it's really hard. I challenge you to spell SQIM, but go ahead.
So a lot of, and I was involved with the Bainbridge Island Community Foundation, which housed theirs with the Seattle Foundation for a great many years. So typically new or smaller community foundations will leverage a bigger, you know, one that's been around longer until they're large enough to kind of go out on their own.
Okay.
So it's a very good structure. Again, they've been around a long time, and they've proven to be pretty pretty effective.
Yeah. Well, I just think community foundations are an exciting opportunity for almost everybody to be able to get involved in charitable work and have some of their asset base, even if you're operating from a small asset base, go to good works on a long-term basis and safely. And I just, I happen to be a big fan of community foundations in general, and a fan, of course, of the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. But if you're not in Washington, if you're not in the area, you know, find out about your local community foundation, I would say to all of us. Anybody anywhere near Tacoma should be given a call, maybe to the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, to find out more. Now, of course, you can go to the website. What is the website address for Greater Tacoma Community Foundation?
It's
Is GTCF.org. Am I right? Okay.
Yes,
I've just got it up over here. And so that's Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, GTCF.org. And if someone can call you and ask a question, is that safe?
Absolutely.
And what number would they call?
The local number is 253-383-5622.
So 383-5622 in the 253 area code.
That's right.
Great. And is there a toll-free? Well, that's right, if there is. We can even put it, what we'll do is we'll put it up at the on the link. We're going to put this up as a you're going to become a Bobcast, you know. That's better than becoming an outcast, by the way. So, Bobcast, podcast.
I love your phraseology, the Bobcast instead of the podcast. I know, very clever, Bob.
That
very
is,
clever.
You know, in my mind, that's state-sanctioned, by the way. One of our first interviews I've been doing, you know, Legal Line for, you know, about 20 years now, hard to believe. And our first program, though, online, we interviewed our state auditor, Brian Sontag. And Brian was kind enough to dub them Bobcasts. And so
You better copyright it.
Brian Wait. May not say
that
state sanctioned, but I'm calling that state sanctioned. Tongue-in-cheek, state sanctioned. We have a, you know, and by the way, if a person wants to hear Brian Sontag's interview, it's up in the Legal Line archives, as this program will be up in the Legal Line archives. And for years, people will be able to hear Jeff's great comments and say, I knew he said that. And you haven't said anything bad, by the way. But it's so great to have you with us today. And anything that... Well, if you could just tell us briefly, I realize some people will be listening down the road to this, but what are a couple of the exciting things that are going on with the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, you know, right now or in the near future?
Well, probably right now we're involved in an initiative called Be the Spark, and that really just signifies how everyone in the community has a role in making a community a better place. Everyone can be a spark, whether it's inspiring someone, doing a small act of kindness. And the real milestone in our launching that program occurs on May 13th of 2011. So for those of you listening afterwards, I'm sorry you missed it. But we're bringing the Archbishop Desmond Tutu here to Pierce County. This will be his final U.S. public appearance.
Wow.
And along with him are some other notables, Pete Carroll, coach of the Seahawks, Bill Gates Sr., a young man named Craig Kielberger. And again, this all culminates with an evening series of events on May 13th, and we're really looking forward to it as a kind of a unifier and inspirational thing for the community.
If someone is listening before the May 11th, can they call and get more information?
Yeah, they can get tickets through Ticketmaster.
Okay.
Or if they've got a group of 12 or more people, they can call the Tacoma Dome directly for a group discount.
So it'll be at the Tacoma Dome.
At the Tacoma Dome. The
which
evening.
Is one of the largest wooden domes in the world.
That's right. The evening of May 13th.
That's exciting. The Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, I know, has launched a number of really neat initiatives, if you will. And I know one of them is the, is it the Women and Girls Fund? Correct
me,
please.
We have what's called a Field of Interest Fund, Bob.
Field of
it's called the Fund
okay.
for Women and Girls.
Thank you.
And that's another advantage of a community foundation is someone can set up a Field of Interest Fund. So if they want to support the environment, but they don't know which organizations today or certainly down the road 10 or 20 years, we can select the individual organizations, but they'll be environmentally driven. So this Fund for Women and Girls has been around for 10 years, and it's established to support issues that are impacting women and girls in Pierce County.
Interesting.
And that's been a very successful fund. And
now
again,
that was originated by the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, was it not?
That's correct. That's correct.
There's another reason, if you think about it, why the Community Foundation is so important, is such an important part of the community, is that may not have ever been thought of or figured out, or nobody would have ever been able to put that together, perhaps, without the Community Foundation,
yeah,
I would argue.
And I think you're right. A big role for community foundations is what, in the industry, we call capacity building, but essentially nurturing smaller organizations, even providing fiscal sponsorships for small organizations so they can work under our 501c3 umbrella, but nurturing small organizations until they can stand on their own. Yeah. And the Fund for Women and Girls is where we don't see them spinning off, because there's a lot of synergy with us and the Fund for Women and Girls.
Sure.
But other organizations might choose to eventually spin off. So it really helps smaller entities.
But that's tremendous. So there's lots of fun stuff. I promise not to keep going. Find out more by getting hold of your community foundation. And if you happen to be, I guess, Western Washington, although you could take calls from anywhere, I guess, but certainly Western Washington, the Puget Sound area, Tacoma area.
And community foundations don't really compete with one another.
No.
So if someone calls and there's a better community foundation in their hometown they don't know about, we'll direct them there.
But if you happen to be in the greater Pierce County area, I guess one would say, give a call to the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. Again, the number 253-3833-5622. Or go to the website, which is the gtcf.org.
Correct.
And we'll try to put a reference up to it at our website, too. Listen to the Bobcast again and again. You can hear Jeff talking to you in the middle of the night now by listening to the. You'll get a call sometime from somebody, and they'll say, "Jeff, I was just listening to you. What what are you doing?" But I just so much appreciate your taking time to enlighten listeners about what to me is one of the most exciting things in the area in life here in Pierce County is having our own, very own community foundation, and for people outside Pierce County, you've got one too. There are how many around the world? I mean, country again?
Like 725.
I mean, they're out there. So check up on yours. Get involved. You can get involved on a small scale. You can get involved on a large scale. You know, talk to your advisors. The advisors generally in an area are going to know the community foundation. I know that's true here in the Tacoma area. But we've been talking to Jeff Pritchard, who is the Director of Development at the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. We're going to be back with you. We've got questions. We're going to put the questions off, I think, until next week. They were emailed in. You can always email us legal questions, you name it, whatever you want to ask about. We'll be glad to talk about it here on Bob Pittman's Legal Line at bobpittman.com. You can email Jeff. It's Jeff, although not Jeff Pritchard, our Jeff. Jeff, J-E-F-F, at bobpittman.com with the two T's. You can give us a call during the program at 253-471-9694. We'd love to get your ideas, love to get your input here on the program here each and every week, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Do plan to be with us. Listen to the podcast. Give your comments. We welcome them. We'll be at the fairgrounds this Saturday, so hopefully some of you will stop out and visit with us 11 to 4 at the Fred Oldfield Center. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll let you know about upcoming Bobcasts, that live broadcasts that we'll actually be doing here on Legal Line. So until next week, at least until next week, stay in control of your legal affairs, and we'll see you again here at BobPittman.com.